Hello, my name is Chip Lang. You're listening to Total EM. Today's podcast is going to be a little different for me and probably for you too, because I don't normally cover current events. It's not something I usually like to do because it's something that changes constantly and you look at it a couple of months or years later and you lose all context for the situation. But today is different because even though we are going to talk about a current event in the sense of something that did just happen for a specific incident, we are going to go more broad than this and actually talk about specific details and some evidence that's out there. So although we're going to tie this in with a current event, a major hot topic right now, this is something I feel like even if you're listening to this in years to come, you're still going to find benefit in this podcast and when reading its blog. Now, the topic is going to be a little more brief than usual because this is all about blood draws and patients' rights, which we could talk about for a long time. But in this case, again, we're going to go over a specific incident. This all comes up because of something that took place at Salt Lake City's University Hospital when a detective with the Salt Lake City Police Department arrested Alex Wobbles, a nurse there, when the officer attempted to collect blood for testing from an unconscious patient. Now, it's worth reminding everyone really quickly that when you're listening to the podcast or reading a blog, that me, the author, I'm not an attorney, and the information presented here is to facilitate discussion, but should not be used in any legal capacity whatsoever, including but not limited to establishing standard of care in a legal sense or as a basis for expert witness testimony, and that there is no guarantee given regarding the accuracy of any statements or opinions made on the blog or podcast. With that little disclaimer out of the way, let's talk about the issue here and its supporting evidence. This has been well documented by several media sources, and actually when I just checked it a few minutes ago, it has blown up all over the place. So there are going to be plenty of ways to find this, and I've included links to the original articles essentially, or some of the best articles out there regarding this case. In summary, Alex Wobbles was a charge nurse at the burn unit of the hospital when the police requested blood from an unconscious patient for testing. Now, there was a policy that was created by the hospital in conjunction with the local law enforcement approximately a year prior to this event that outlined the policy for collecting patients' blood. They specified three instances when blood could be drawn and used by law enforcement. The first one was that the patient gave consent. The second option was that the patient was under arrest. And the third was that there was a warrant present. In this case, based on the videos, which the videos are great, there's a lot of good resources there, and you can actually see this about 19-minute video regarding all of this, that it's very clear how this came to be and why this was an issue. So the detective told another officer that they were not able to obtain a warrant and that this was due to a lack of probable cause, which they refer to as PC in the video. Since the patient wasn't under arrest at the time, they could not use that. In fact, according to the detective, he was actually trying to obtain the blood to help the patient. So wasn't trying to arrest them, wasn't trying to use it necessarily against them. And that the patient was actually an off-duty reserve police officer for another department who was driving a semi when it was struck by another vehicle that was running from police. And basically, this results in a big fiery crash, which injured the driver, the victim that was the patient in this case, with severe burns, which is why the patient was sedated. Now, local law enforcement claimed that the patient's blood could be used under implied consent since the patient wasn't able to give consent himself. However, this conflicts evidence that we have from previous judgments, both by the Supreme Court of Utah and the United States Supreme Court. While attempting to discuss this issue of consent with the police, Alex Wobbles was forcefully arrested by the detective. Meanwhile, administrators were still being contacted to discuss the issue, and even one of them was on the phone with Alex Wobbles when the detective started the arrest. And there were other administrators who were already on their way to the hospital to try and discuss this issue further. A lieutenant for the police department, who's also the watch commander, responded after the arrest was made and explained that had she complied, she would not have been arrested. And there's a lot of other details in the video, basically how the detective had made some comments, because he's also a paramedic, about how he would only drop off transients there anymore, and that he'd send the good patients to other hospitals. Just lots of language that really wasn't appropriate for the circumstance, and just really is damning against the police department in this case, given the actions of their officers in this scenario. The video also shows that same lieutenant who had made the discussion with Alex Wobbles was also unwilling to talk to the administrators who are on the phone, who went to discuss the privacy issues and patients' rights. And again, very negative when you watch the video how the lieutenant is acting in this case. But worth watching yourself. It is 19 or so minutes for that body cam that includes all this, but it's well worth it to understand the true details of the scenario. Eventually, Alex Wobbles was released by the police without charges, and shortly after information, the arrest and its videos were released about a month after the actual incident, which was July 26, 2017. The officers were then placed on administrative leave. Again, more of this is coming out with time. I'm sure there are going to be changes as it comes down the line, so this may change in the future, but as of the time of this recording, there are officers who are already on administrative leave. There are certain things we should ask ourselves with this scenario. So how did this happen? Now, communication is a key part of this, and although the hospital had created a policy that was written alongside law enforcement, they did not share the same thoughts when it actually came to this important matter. Worse yet, officers were acting under incorrect assumptions when they said that they were using implied consent and that they could use it in this situation. Now, previously, the Supreme Court of Utah decided in 2007 that implied consent could not be used for blood draws. And more recently, the Supreme Court of the United States decided in 2016 that the Fourth Amendment allows for warrantless breath tests, but not warrantless blood tests. And some of you may be wondering why the difference. And the Supreme Court, basically in its decision, now its main decision, again, if you go through and actually read, especially in the show notes where we have this linked in, you'll see that there are actually multiple comments. But again, the majority agreed that this was possible, that warrantless breath tests were okay, but not warrantless blood tests. The differentiation is based on the invasiveness of the procedure, because again, you're going in, you're using a needle into the skin, so you're causing potential harm there, versus a breath test, you're basically breathing into a tube. The ability for the blood to be used for other purposes, so in the difference of being able to just get a blood alcohol content on the breath, whereas if you draw blood, in theory, you could also use it for other purposes besides that BAC, that blood alcohol content. And then embarrassment of the actual procedure itself, where the Supreme Court justices basically decided that a breathalyzer probably isn't going to increase embarrassment, whereas a blood draw potentially could. All three of those factors all tie into the process of why this would be inappropriate without a proper warrant. What does all this mean for our patients? Well, the Supreme Court is essentially the law of the land, and when it comes down to a final decision when deciding if laws are unconstitutional or constitutional. Since warrantless blood draws were decided to be unconstitutional under the Fourth Amendment, this would imply that such a procedure cannot be performed. And this is a pretty big deal for us because this changes a lot of local policies, and we'll talk about that here more in a second. But we have to keep this in mind because this is very different than what we've been taught in the past. Now, it's worth noting that this only protects patients from criminal charges for failure to give blood without a warrant. And the reason why is because, again, if you actually read the document, which it's not that long, I'm going to say it's 67 pages, but even though that sounds really long, the wording and how Supreme Court decisions are typed out, this isn't really that bad. It's more like 30 pages or so of content. But basically, when you read through all of this, you're going to find out that essentially what they're talking about here is that when it comes down to making such decisions and whether or not patients can do this, they can refuse to get their blood drawn, it's protecting them from the legal ramifications of criminal charges, but it doesn't necessarily protect them from civil charges, if I read that correctly. And again, if someone out there who's a little more fluent in the law and can read this a little bit better may say otherwise, that's fine. Just please point that out in the show notes and we'll talk about that more from there. But the biggest thing to keep in mind for this is that Essentially, without a warrant, law enforcement cannot use blood for blood draw purposes without having some other means. So again, a warrant with probable cause. Now, they could use a breathalyzer, and that's fine, or the patient themselves could give consent. But unless they give consent or there is a warrant present, this does not allow for this to happen. Now, the under arrest part is interesting because technically with the Supreme Court part, even if that patient was under arrest, this could maybe still be something of a discrepancy. Again, if you are a bigger expert in this, please let me know. But really, this is talking about warrant versus no warrant with the Supreme Court decision. And with their wording in the actual document, makes it pretty clear that just because you're under arrest doesn't mean you can always do a search or seizure without specific warrants. Basically, when they outline this in the actual judgment and decision, what they explain is that even though all these different aspects of a search could be performed, such as you pat down the person, you search their car, you search their phone, you search their person, you have them do a breathalyzer, yes, you could do all those things, but usually you have to have a reason why. There has to be probable cause tied to it. And basically, you have to show that this was a time-sensitive matter, that you waited to, that you had to do this right away versus waiting to get a warrant. And that term is called exigent circumstances. And exigent circumstances is a criminal procedural part where basically it means that an emergency situation that requires swift action to prevent imminent danger to life or serious damage to property, or to forestall the imminent escape of a suspect or destruction of evidence. Some have argued that exigent circumstances do exist in blood alcohol. In fact, there was a previous decision that was passed from the Missouri Supreme Court and moved up to the Supreme Court, where there's a decision there that because of the metabolism of alcohol, this could be partly a reason for exigent circumstances. Based on this newest Supreme Court decision in 2016, that actually changes parts of that still, which is part of the debate for some of the justices, is why they did not agree with the decision that was made about warrantless blood draws, but you could have warrantless breathalyzer tests. But long story short, when it came to this decision, we need to keep this in mind with the local context for us. And keep in mind that with patients, this is all about protecting their privacy, right? So we need to make sure that patients understand the risks with this. We need to understand our local state laws, and as well as the federal law, which again, with the Supreme Court making this decision, it does change a lot of things, which leads to our next part. What does this mean for us? Well, it's vitally important that we follow hospital policies, but more importantly, also the law. Now, with hospital policy on this, probably most of our hospitals either don't have a policy outlining when law enforcement can draw blood, or it probably hasn't been updated since this new decision by the Supreme Court. If that's the case, we need to have this conversation both with the administrative team of the hospital and with law enforcement before something like this comes up, because inevitably, all of us will come up with this at some point where we're going to have to make these types of decisions. And so we need to check our hospital policies first. And this is something easy to do. Most of us have access to hospital policies, and you should if you don't. Take a look at this. If you notice this is missing and you're not an administrator, talk to an administrator that you feel comfortable with. This may very well be your medical director or your nursing department director. Whatever the case may be, find someone to talk to about this and detail this discussion. You know, talk about the Supreme Court case, talk about this recent incident in the media. Basically, make this a reason for us to make this change versus holding off, because this could be a big, big issue. This actually also leads to another point, because we need to make sure that everyone's educated on this issue. And we need to remember that administration plays an important role in cases like this. Say you're in the same case as our charge nurse, Alex Wobbles, was in this case. What do you do next? Well, I would have done the same thing that she did. I would have gotten on the phone with my chain of command, with administrators, and tried to figure out a solution. And this is essentially what we need to do in this case, is that if we don't have a final policy set in place, we need to get people above us to start getting talks with us and try and figure out what we can do to make this happen, especially if at all possible before we have this exact case or a similar case going on, because we don't want to end up where someone inadvertently gets arrested for a reason that is actually not appropriate. Finally, what do we do next? Well, we need to have open and honest conversations with our patients, staff, and visitors. And visitors includes law enforcement. Although police are here to serve and protect, we must remember that we are also here to serve and protect patients' rights and to follow appropriate actions. In the case of Alex Wobble, she appears to have fulfilled those duties and acted well above what she needs to do to help protect the patient's best interest while still obeying the law. Now, we should commend her for her actions and learn more from her and others who have worked to protect patients and staff. Violence in the workplace is a real issue, and we need to stand up against this, especially in healthcare. This is a common issue for us, and really, a lot of us have probably experienced violence in the workplace, whether that be verbal, emotional, or physical abuse. We need to be cognizant of this. And we especially don't want this to happen in settings where law enforcement is part of the issue. We want law enforcement on our side. We want people on our side for this. And so for this reason, I feel like it's very important for us to have these conversations well in advance and make sure that we're protecting our patients, ourselves, and everyone who we come across. Luckily, in this case, there have already been major responses to this. The Salt Lake City mayor and its police chief have issued apologies and already started investigations in the matter. We've had police involved, at least some of them, put on an administrative leave and have already started re-educating police in redoing these blood draws. Now, that's great for Salt Lake City and the surrounding area, but we need to work across the nation to update these changes. And this is, again, something we can easily do. You can go tomorrow or on your next shift and just quickly look at your policy. And if you can't find it, ask your charge nurse or your medical director. I'm sure someone has access to this. And basically, if we had had this in advance, we probably could prevent such a situation. And I feel like that's what they tried to do in the case with Alex Wobbles, was they had a policy in place, but unfortunately still couldn't prevent this. But if we are able to do outreach and education in advance, maybe we could have helped prevent this from ever happening. And most importantly, we should, in our own settings, always work towards identifying just changes in general. Because again, this is only one example. It's an important example and it's a very current example. But in general, we should be reviewing our policies rather often, see what policies are there, see which ones need to be added. For example, do you have an active shooter policy? And if so, what does it detail? Do you have a mass casualty policy? All those types of things are things we need to look into. Essentially, again, we need to keep each other safe. That's a big part of this for me, because unfortunately, a lot of people stood by, including the university's own security, by not intervening this when this was something that was obviously out of line with how law enforcement there had responded. And again, fortunately, we've seen good response by the law enforcement community in that area saying that this was inappropriate and we're working to correct this. Again, this is not meant to be any sort of name blame or to call anyone out. I really trust law enforcement. I believe in their importance and the roles they provide for us. But this is such a perfect example of when someone did the right thing and still had issues come up, and what we could do in the future to help prevent this and how we can address this in our own community. Thank you all for listening. Again, this was meant to be a shorter podcast, and hopefully you all can have some takeaway points from this. But until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere. Thank you for downloading another episode of Total EM. We want to thank our bandwidth sponsor, FunnyRx, for sponsoring this show. You can also see them on our website, but we also have included links to their website, FunnyRx.com. Again, thank you, FunnyRx, for sponsoring this episode.